Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
Is it true that the Cherokee Indians are actually related to the ancient people of Israel? Is it true that there is inscriptional evidence here in America that points in that very direction? We'll take it up today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
Well, we're coming to the end of the year here on the Line of Fire. There are some interesting questions I want to take up. I want to open the phones for any questions you might have. And those that haven't spoken with me since before Christmas, if you observe this day and season as unto the Lord, I hope you had a blessed Christmas. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or you can get involved in the Facebook discussion at Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. That's Ask Dr. Brown. Okay, I am familiar, of course, with the claims of the Mormons, which would point to the American Indians, Native Americans, as relating to the ancient tribes of Israel. When I was writing my book, What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus and Other Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs, Practices, and History, I took up the question of the 10 lost tribes and tried to separate myth from reality there. And in that context, also talked about evidence. Is there evidence that there are inscriptions here from early American history that would go back to biblical days, that would go back to Old Testament times, that point to Hebrew inscriptions that would mean that there was actually an Israelite presence here in America? I looked into some of that, and what was fascinating to me was in one book I had, one of the world's top Semitic scholars argued in this direction. That was of special interest to me because when I was at New York University, the main professor that I studied with there was Professor Baruch Levine, a biblical and Semitic scholar of highest rank. And he had studied at Brandeis under Cyrus H. Gordon, C.H. Gordon. In fact, we used Gordon's famous Ugaritic textbook in the very first grad class I had at New York University. Gordon was one of the world's most respected Semitic scholars, and Gordon, C.H. Gordon, had actually argued in this direction that there was an ancient Israelite presence, that you can find evidence in inscriptions and other things that would point in this direction. Now, Gordon was also known for having some views that were somewhat eccentric, somewhat out there. So the fact that Gordon supported something could really point to it being taken seriously, or it could point to being perhaps eccentric, perhaps a little further out there than some would like to consider. Anyway, the deal is that someone recently posted a question on Facebook after reading a report from a Tamar Yonav, Israel National News, that occurred was found in the Levitt letter, so Levitt's ministry, now led by my dear friend, Professor Dr. Jeffrey Seif. And the article was called America's Discoverer, King Solomon or Christopher Columbus. Were Jews in the Americas in biblical times? Were Jews in the Americas in biblical times? Is there DNA evidence that points in this direction? Is there inscriptional evidence, ancient inscriptions from a Hebrew-speaking people written in an ancient Hebrew script? Are there customs among the Cherokees that would point in this direction? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, also today, because I wasn't able to do this on Friday, and I want to get to as many questions as I can between now and the end of the year, if you'd like to ask me about something unrelated to this, if you'd like to ask me about something that ties in with any area of our expertise here on the Line of Fire, any biblical, theological subject, translation issue, anything having to do with the spiritual, moral climate here in America, any church, theological-related controversy, apologetics question, or anything having to do with Israel and the Jewish people, I'll see if I can get to some calls about other subjects as well today and in the coming days before the new year. 866-34-TRUTH. But first, is it possible that the Cherokee people, other Native American peoples, are actually related to the ancient people of Israel? Is there evidence in the form of DNA, inscriptions, customs, etc.? Let me read some of this short article by Tamar Yonah, Israel National News, again, published in last month's Levitt Letter and brought to my attention by someone posting on Facebook. Biblical scripture records that King Solomon had a sophisticated navy that voyaged the world on exploration looking for iron, gold, and other materials to build Jerusalem and the Holy Temple, with references from 1 Kings chapter 9 and 1 Kings chapter 10. Ancient Hebrew inscriptions of the Ten Commandments on the Los Lunas Rock and coins from ancient Israel that were found in the Ohio River Basin lead some experts to believe that the first settlers to America were not the pilgrims, but the Jews and Phoenicians. Of course, we've heard other stories about the Vikings being here before Christopher Columbus, and then obviously settling here before the pilgrims, or at least visiting here. Well, what about the people of Israel? More profoundly, what if these were people that were fleeing at different times? What if these were Samaritans that were fleeing, the Samaritans being considered in their own mind as legitimate Israelites and by the Jewish community as kind of half-breeds? Were the Samaritans here, as C.H. Gordon suggested might be possible? Was it maybe just other Phoenician peoples, Semitic peoples related to the Hebrews? Is it possible that some of the lost tribes of Israel fled here from the Assyrians 2,700 plus years ago and actually make up part of the American Indians, the Native Americans? Is that possible? Let's keep reading. Ancient Hebrew inscriptions of the Ten Commandments on the Los Lunas Rock and coins from ancient Israel that were found on the Ohio River Basin lead some experts to believe that the first settlers to America were not the pilgrims, but the Jews and Phoenicians. The Ohio River was used as a trade line within the continent, which could explain the coins from the time of Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba was part of a revolt against Rome and ultimately killed when the revolt was put down in the year 135 AD. So this could explain then coins from the time of Bar Kokhba, so 1800 plus years ago, that were found there. Knowing this well-traveled route to the New World, did some of the 10 tribes of the Northern Kingdom sail on ships to these distant lands to escape the Assyrian onslaught 2,700 years ago and subsequent exile? Did other Jews fleeing the Roman Empire escape to the New World as well? Are ancient Jewish people the ancestors of some Native American tribes? And feel free to call in if you'd like to argue the Mormon perspective on this as well. There are many similarities to Judaism in some Native American tribes, specifically the Cherokee Nation. The Cherokees were monotheistic, believing in one god. Other Indian tribes believed in several gods, spirits. Some of the words in the Cherokee language are similar to Hebrew words of the same meaning, and the name of their god was similar to the Hebrew name of God. The Cherokee Indians also celebrated holidays akin to Jewish holidays. They had one day a week of rest from work and observed fasts. They reportedly practiced circumcision and didn't eat the meat on the hollow of the thigh of an animal. Their appearance also hints of a possible Jewish ancestry. Their two braids at the side of their head resemble long side locks, peyote. The fringes on their clothes resemble tzitzit, the ritual fringe a Jewish man wears on his four-cornered garment. And some Cherokees clearly had Semitic facial features. Hebrew inscriptions on Los Lunas Decalogue Stone, the Bat Creek Stone, ancient Jewish coins found in Ohio along the River Basin. The Cherokee Indians all point to some type of Jewish presence and influence, and that needs to be researched more. So says Tamar Yonah in an Israel National News article. First thing is there any reason to dismiss this out of hand? Before I give you my analysis, not as an expert in this particular subject, but as an expert in some related subjects at least, before I give you my take on this, the first question is there anything that would tell us this couldn't be true? Is there anything, I'm not talking about the specific evidence that we're about to get into and discuss, but on the surface of things, the idea that some of the ancient Israelites fled to America, let's say that naval technology was sufficient to make it across the Atlantic. I'm certainly not expert in that, can't comment on it. But if we know the Phoenician peoples were famous seafarers, perhaps some of this technology was learned and known by the people of Israel to the point that they could sail across the Atlantic. If that were possible, is there any reason why, with the people of Israel scattered around the world, that some of them could not have come to America and been part, mingled in with or actually been the dominant part of one of the ancient tribes, like the Cherokees, Native American peoples. I mean, they came from somewhere, right? So before we discuss whether this is feasible based on the evidence, on the surface of it, I have no problem with the concept. On the surface of it, the fact that the people of Israel scattered around the world and intermingled with other peoples and perhaps maintained a remnant among them or maintained some type of identity among them or passed on customs among them, on the surface of it, I don't have a problem with it. Is it feasible is the bigger question. And you always hear reports of different people groups being discovered that are part of the lost tribes of Israel. We'll take that up as well on the program. Is there anything to this notion of the 10 lost tribes? Is there a myth? Is there reality? We'll sort that out today on the Line of Fire. Hopefully I'll get to some other interesting questions as well and take your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown, as we count down the last few years of last few days of 2010. No, we're not counting down the last few years of this era. No, I do not have a special insight into the exact day and year in which Jesus is returning. So for those like, oh, counting down the year. No. That was a slip of the tongue. As I was thinking about the year, I jumped ahead. Counting down the days of 2010, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions, we've got answers. This week I'll be taking questions on a variety of subjects, catching up with some older emails, as well as touching on some subjects of real interest. Today we're discussing an article that came out, was printed in the Levitt Letter, originally from Israel National News by Tom Aryona, Were Jews in the Americas in Biblical Times, America's Discoverer, King Solomon, or Christopher Columbus? And the arguments would be that there are customs that were shared by certain tribes, in particular the Cherokees, that would point to a common history with ancient Israel, that there are inscriptions, most notably the Ten Commandments inscription on the Los Lunas Rock, coins from ancient Israel found in the Ohio River Basin, and some would even argue DNA evidence. So let me say again, on the surface of things, I have no problem with it being the case. In other words, if there were people of Israel scattered around the world, exiled, if some had a capability to sail across the Atlantic 2,700 years ago, again, this is not my area of expertise in terms of ships and naval technology, but let's just say theoretically that they could have somehow made it here. Do I have a problem with that concept? No. Do I have a problem with the concept that they would have intermingled among other peoples and otherwise been lost to civilization if not for certain shared customs or inscriptions left behind? I have no problem with that theoretically. And we do have evidence of some ancient groups, for example, Ethiopian Jews claiming an ancient heritage. It's disputed by some and questioned about DNA evidence. Others would say, hey, check this out, though. Check this out. We actually have evidence of customs that were practiced by these people that go back to pre-biblical times, and they're ignorant, or pre-New Testament times, I should say, and these people are ignorant of some of the teachings of the rabbis that came later. So perhaps they are legitimate Jews going all the way back, certainly a part of the extended family of Israel. Okay, I have no problem in theory with these things. I am all for regathering those that can trace back Jewish heritage to Israel. My question is, these specific claims, are they true? Now, we know there's a lot of mythology in the Book of Mormon and the Lamanites and so on and whatever the different alleged tribes were that simply is not factually true. But what about these specific arguments? Could they be true? When I looked into this a few years ago, as I mentioned earlier, writing my book, What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus? When I raised the question there of the 10 lost tribes of Israel, first I dealt with the myth. There is a myth that's found in some Jewish circles that over this mythical river that the 10 tribes are still together and can be found, okay? That, again, is purely a myth. Let me just read to you from Rabbi Joseph Telushkin's book on Jewish literacy. We lack precise information on the Ten Tribes' fate. Therefore, a large body of legends has grown up speculating on what became of them. As a rule, any nation that has acted sympathetically to the Jews, for example, England after it issued the Balfour Declaration, or practiced any ritual that corresponds to some ritual in the Torah, as do some American Indian tribes, has been rumored to be descended from the Ten Lost Tribes. In the darkest period of the Middle Ages, when almost all Jews lived under Christian or Muslim oppression, tales spread of a mighty kingdom beyond the legendary Sabaton River, inhabited by the Ten Tribes, which would someday come and rescue its suffering brothers. Those things, of course, are simply mythical. I do continue, though, to discuss these issues, page 117 of What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus? And I say this: there's simply no truth to the claim of groups such as the British Israelites, who believe that the lost ten tribes of the Northern House of Israel descendants are to be found in the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and kindred peoples of today. Nor is there any support for the Mormon claim that the Native Americans are descended from the ancient Israelites, despite the fact that no less a Semitic scholar than C.H. Gordon pointed to possible links between the Israelites, or more precisely Judeans, and Native Americans, claiming that there was evidence for ancient Hebrew inscriptions in America. DNA evidence, among other things, is against such an identification. And not surprisingly, the recent book by former Mormon Bishop Simon G. Southerton, a molecular geneticist from Australia, entitled Losing a Lost Tribe, Native Americans' DNA in the Mormon Church, has generated a fierce backlash from Mormon apologists, so damning are its conclusions to Mormonism. Let me just say this to Mormon friends that are listening. Remember, it's the truth that sets us free. We are all raised in different religions and faiths. They are not all true at the same time. They cannot be true and mutually exclusive at the same time. So people are raised Hindu, people are raised Buddhist, people are raised in atheistic homes, people are raised in Mormon homes, people are raised in evangelical Christian homes. I was raised in a Jewish home, although not a heavily religious Jewish home. It is imperative for each of us to study the truth claims. To investigate, are the things we were raised in, the things we were taught, actually true? It's imperative for us to dig deeper and to find out if the traditions that have been passed on to us are accurate. I've spoken to many rabbis, and they would say that they know Orthodox rabbis, and they would say that they know the truth of what they're living because it's been passed on through the generations, and because we have survived as a Jewish people, that's the great proof that the traditions are true. I'm oversimplifying. Of course, I challenge that. I'm very open to people challenging me about every area of belief I have. When I interact with the homosexual community, they want to challenge me on what Scripture says. Let's look at it together. When I interact with people from different faiths that don't agree with me, let's look at it by all means. God willing, in the new year, we'll do a substantial interview with Professor Mike Lacona, Dr. Mike Lacona, who's just published his doctoral thesis, clearly laid out, 600-page volume, wonderful volume on the historicity of the resurrection, but looking at it in terms of comparing it to other ancient historical accounts. By all means, let's investigate these things. So if what I'm saying to you as a Mormon, and by the way, this was not a Mormon question when I started it. This was just one about these ancient peoples and Cherokee Indians and is their relationship to ancient Israel and so on. I would encourage you, I would urge you, seek the truth. You say, but a lot of different people give lots of different arguments. Well, study all you can study, but get on your knees, get on your face before God and say, God, I just want to know the truth. Whatever the cost, whatever the consequence, if I have to throw out everything I thought was true and start from scratch, or if I find out that the Bible alone is true and not the Book of Mormon, well, I know there may be family shame. I know there may be ostracized. I may lose a job. I may lose family, friends. I don't know what's facing me. I may go through a lot of abuse from people that I've worked with for years and told I was sure that I was right. But whatever the cost, whatever the consequences, we cannot live in self-deception. We cannot live in a state of being deceived by others. And the one thing we can do is with all our heart, with all our soul, say, oh God, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence, show me the truth. Cause me to understand your way, your truth, and I will follow you. I will be your disciple. I will be your loyal student, follower, son, daughter for life. All right, we come back. I'm going to address quickly these other issues about ancient Israelites and Cherokees and the Los Lunas inscription and take up some more of your questions. Stay with us. Just looking at a review of the book I mentioned earlier, Simon G. Sutherton, Losing a Lost Tribe, Native Americans' DNA in the Mormon Church. I'll read a quote from that in a moment. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us this December 28th. As we're talking about Cherokee Indians, Hebrew inscriptions in America, could it be? If you've got some other questions that you'd like to raise today, completely unrelated to this, I'll try to get to some calls before the show's out. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Tomorrow, we're going to give you some things to think about in terms of how far we're down the slippery slope here in America. If you'd like to get into previous conversations, on our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. While you were there, may I strongly encourage you to stand with us at the end of this year. We really do come your way as an act of faith every day. We really are here to serve you, not for our gain, but for the advance of the kingdom and the glorification in the name of Jesus. And every gift that comes into us helps us broadcast this message to more and more people across America. If you believe in what we're doing, what we're saying, stand with us. Every time a gift is sent into us, it helps us reach Jewish people with the gospel, helps us raise up, send out missionaries around the world. More happens with money sent into this ministry than a whole lot of others that would perhaps have less of a vision and perhaps be building a bit more inwardly than outwardly. So all that to say, it's a good investment to stand with us. Click on support, or you can write to us directly at P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027. What we've been doing last week and this week, for your gift of any size, our way of saying thank you, our way of expressing our appreciation, is to send you a 2-DVD series, The Deity of Messiah, Son of God, or Chosen Man, a wonderful debate where I was able to team with Dr. James White and discuss these important issues with Sir Anthony Buzzard and Mr. Joseph Good. Eye-opening, important debate. You can purchase it for $20, but our way of saying thank you for any gift of any size sent to us, simply request it, and we will get it out to you with your gift. All right, let me read this quote to you, specifically about a Mormon claim. This review is from Tribal College Journal of American Indian Higher Education, Gwynne Spencer. The Mormon establishment will not be happy with this book because it demands an answer. If the so-called Lamanites, Native Americans, were spawned from an escaped tribe of Israelites, why does their DNA show a 98.6% Asian connection and 0% Middle Eastern? If the Lamanites built huge cities and had steel swords and chariots and written language and brought down the white-faced civilized tribe of Mormon, where are the ruins, where are the artifacts, where are the DNA markers and answer? Simon G. Sutherton, a senior research scientist with the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization in Australia, a respected molecular biologist, says it's all mythology, historical fiction, etc. Okay. So what about these issues with inscriptions, shared customs, etc.? As far as DNA evidence, everything that I've studied and read points clearly to the fact that the ancient Israelites do not connect with Native Americans. There may be slight similarities. Those similarities, I understand, would commonly be found among various people groups. But in terms of the clear markers we're looking for, they point in the exact opposite direction to say, no, they are not descendants of ancient Israel. That's one thing. The second thing is the idea of shared customs. Mention was made of the Cherokees having a day of rest or wearing the braids. Those could resemble the long sidelocks, the peyote of the people of Israel. Well, the first thing is the peyote, the particular custom of wearing the long sidelocks, comes later. That doesn't go back to the ancient northern tribes. I'm quite sure that you would see that those things come much later. So if it was ancient Israelites, and they had come over here, say, 2,700 years ago, fleeing from the Assyrians and using naval technology, perhaps, that they had learned from the Phoenicians, they wouldn't have looked like that. They wouldn't have had the long side curls. That's a later rabbinic development, something that would have been unknown to Moses, for example, and unknown to Solomon, and unknown to Isaiah or Jeremiah. according to everything I understand, having studied that in some depth. So the shared custom things becomes very murky. And what you have to do is do a massive sociological search around the world, anthropological search, and look for various shared customs that just different things arise. Human beings do different things. The fact there's a rest day, etc. The fact that some groups are polytheistic and others have developed in monotheistic ways does not point directly to a connection to Israel. So unless I had much more information pointing to shared customs, I'd have a big question mark. Look, there are groups that are found in different parts of the world. They practice eighth-day circumcision. When you probe deeper, they seem to have some connection to ancient Israel. So I'm not rejecting that possibility in terms of could it happen. I'm simply saying in this case, highly unlikely to say the least. What about the Los Lunas Decalogue? I have yet to see serious academic research on it where we can determine a date and then do a paleographical analysis, really look at the letters, etc., really look at the grammar, the nature of expression, and rule out any possibility of a forgery. Other alleged ancient inscriptions found here in America have been not definitively, but fairly conclusively demonstrated to be forgeries. So based on that, I would have very, very little reason to open up the possibility that this could be true based on this one inscription. Now, could it be? Again, possible. Possible. The C.H. Gordon theory was that the Samaritans, following the commandment to write the commands on doorposts, etc., would have inscriptions in prominent places in their communities that would have the Ten Commandments or various biblical passages, and that this would be in keeping with it, and Samaritans were fleeing from Rome. And there's a whole lot of speculation. But if this is the evidence for it, I would lean much more in the direction of forgery, as we know is the case in other examples, than saying that it really happened. Let me tell you something else that troubles me a little bit. Now, again, if evidence one day comes up saying that this is true, hey, fine. So be it. Doesn't throw me, all right? Because we know that the people of Israel were scattered, in fact, around the world. But let me tell you something else that troubles me. When I check these things online, when I look into them a little bit further, it tends to be the sensationalistic websites that carry these things. And for example, you'll find references to a black man of Cherokee background in Israel by the name of Haushua Amariel, who has, you'll see a link to Guinness World Book of Records as the first word-for-word translation of a Paleo-Hebrew manuscript of the Torah, etc. And you can go online, Amariel Family Publishing, and look at book samples. This stuff is nonsense. Nonsense. With all respect to this gentleman and whatever background he has and however sincere he is, it's nonsense. I mean, I can read Paleo-Hebrew. It's just the ancient Hebrew script, more closely related to the original Phoenician script from whence it was borrowed. And it's the actual words of Genesis 1, for example, they have on there, Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. And, okay, we could debate vowels here and there because the vowels are not there in the original. Okay, fine. But here's translation, word for word, be like if you had an interlinear translation. The opening word, as you as head in, then create, then the word Elohim, from as Allah, then a word that's just a marker of something following with a definite article, translates as ye, as you as head in, create from as Allah ye, heavens the ye, and this is nonsense. It would be like saying, oh, look, in thy Bible it says in the beginning that has Begin in it, it's a prophecy of Menachem Begin. I mean, this is just nonsense. Nonsense. These are the type of things that sometimes get brought in to prove the point, which makes me all the more skeptical. Back with some interesting questions from you, the listeners. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Maybe your schedule's changed a little this time of the year, and this is the first time you're catching our broadcast, wherever you are in the States or listening anywhere in the world online. Welcome to the Line of Fire. It is our goal here to be a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution to stand for moral sanity and spiritual clarity, to bring you a kingdom perspective on what is happening in our society, to function as sons of Issachar who understand the times and know what God's people should do. Tomorrow's broadcast will be an important one where we talk about how far down the slippery slope are we in America. Okay, as I have argued against the idea that Native American tribes, or Cherokees in particular, relate to the ancient people of Israel, I do want to say that it's fascinating to see that within Israel, there's often a great esteem for Native American peoples, perhaps because of their down-to-earth spirituality, perhaps because of their history of persecution or history of suffering at the hands of settlers here in America. In history, whatever the case is, it's very interesting to see this connection. Are there any spiritual links beyond what we're talking about? I don't know what those would be. I do have friends that are really involved with working to bring Native Americans to Israel, and they're normally highly esteemed when they do come. Perhaps their humility, hard to say exactly why. And then many of them do feel a deep connection to Israel. If there's something more to it, let the Lord sort it out on that day. But in terms of the Mormon claims and those arguments, everything in terms of historical evidence and DNA evidence, etc., is clearly absolutely against it. I was asked a question. By the way, I once saw a little cartoon, and it was two Native Americans talking to two Israelis, and they said, you know, this whole land for peace thing didn't work well for us. Word of counsel to the Jewish people in Israel today. I got a question from Ruth, and it ties in with Israel and scattering, so I want to raise it. Ruth says, hi, Dr. Brown. I noticed that you expressed your opinion of Reinhard Bonnke's ministry on a recent show, and so I'm wondering if you could venture an opinion on Art Katz's ministry. And by the way, I do my best not to mention specific names of people on the broadcast. If I'm speaking of them in a positive way, I will. If I want to take issue with them, I only mention the name if what I'm going to address is so wrong and ties in with these people in such a profound way that it's right to make a negative judgment. In other words, you could get just about anybody that's written a lot, that's spoken a lot, pull out a quote here and there, something they said that perhaps they regret, something they said that doesn't really represent who they are, and make them look terrible. So if I'm going to mention a name, if I'm going to speak of a ministry, I'm going to do it in a way that's more holistic. So that if I categorically reject something, understand it's not just because of a quote that's thrown out somewhere. In the same way, when I speak affirmatively of someone, I'm going to do it based on really knowing them and their ministry as well. So Ruth says, I know that Art has passed on, but I do understand from listening to some of his expositions that he considered the time of Jacob's trouble to be an end time phenomenon. Basically, I'm wondering if you concur with Art's findings, and if you differ in some way, would you please explain further? Thank you. I know you've presented links to Art Katz's ministry, but I don't know how much you actually share his point of view. All right. First, it was a joy and privilege to know Art Katz as a friend, first having heard him speak in 1976 and then reaching out to him with a small group of believers in 82, where we spent some time with him just to get some input and counsel, and then becoming a close and dear personal friend of our dear brother Art until he went to be with the Lord a couple of years back. If you've never read his Ben Israel book, his personal testimony, it's moving, it's stirring, it's one of the great Jewish testimonies in modern times. If you want a book that'll challenge you, shake you to your spiritual foundation, especially if you're in leadership and ministry, read his Apostolic Foundations. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Talk about what real apostolic ministry is. Get that book and read it, Apostolic Foundations by Art Katz. Now, where Art and I did not have complete agreement was on the future of Israel. He believed that Jeremiah, the 30th chapter, speaking of Jacob's trouble, had not yet taken place on any level, and that, or had not fully taken place as spoken of by scriptures, and that ultimately there would be another dispersion. There would be yet another dispersion of the Jewish people from the land, and then the final regathering that the Word of God spoke of, the final promised restoration, the final glorious ingathering. I'll tell you why I had that difference with my brother, but I'll tell you what I profoundly agree with in terms of his overall perspective. And again, if you want penetrating spirituality, one of the most penetratingly spiritual men I had the privilege of working with and knowing, my friend Art Katz. Get some of his books, listen to some of his messages online, and prepare to be shaken. Just checking some of the posts on Facebook, interesting to see that there are some rabbis in Israel who believe there's a connection between the Cherokee peoples and the ancient people of Israel. Hey, like I said, it's possible, but everything I understand in terms of DNA evidence and other evidence points in the opposite direction. Okay, I want to get in a few more things of interest here on the show. Again, tomorrow's show is going to be very important as we talk about how far down the slippery slope we are here in America. And as we come towards the end of this year, I want to encourage you, want to challenge you, want to strengthen you, want to get you thinking. So a question was asked about Art Katz, esteemed Jewish believing brother who's with the Lord now. In fact, Scott Volk, who is the pastor leader of our congregation here, Fire, part of our leadership team, lived with his family communally with Art Katz and his family for 9.5 years in northern Israel, in the Ben Israel community. So that's we've got some very close contact with Art here. Art believed that based on the prophetic scriptures about desolation in Judah and Israel, that there would be a final humbling of the Jewish people, that there would be a further destruction beyond what's happened historically, beyond the Holocaust, a further destruction with a final dispersion of the people and then a glorious regathering. Now, he and I discussed this. I sent him my Jeremiah. Sending him my Jeremiah commentary was on the list of things to do, but he went to be with the Lord before that. But I sent him excerpts along the way. I was really looking forward to sending him the finished commentary, but it took some years for the publisher to get it out because of it being part of a commentary series. So we discussed this issue, and he felt that prophetic scriptures like Isaiah 6 and Jeremiah 30 were yet to be fulfilled, speaking of a total desolation of the land. And my take was that they had been fulfilled in different layers through history, that there was future tribulation for Israel. We agreed on that, but that God would deliver Israel out of it was the ultimate promise. And so how God delivered Israel out of it, that's where we differed. Now, I would say also, because Zechariah 12 and Zechariah 14 talk about all nations coming against Israel, talk about this time of final calamity out of which God delivers the people, that we are in the land at this point. In other words, we're not in the land and then scattered out of the land. And no, we're in the land while this attack is taking place, while these final things are happening. However, I would say this. Art's emphasis on Israel coming to the end of itself, on the Jewish people losing all trust in their own righteousness, their own ability, is absolutely something that must happen for there to be a national turning, and for God to act in such a way that it is only through the cross and only to the glory of God is something that Art conveyed so profoundly, and it is that emphasis that I would like to make, our profound agreement on those fundamentals. That being said, let me give you my bottom line. There are lots of interesting theories. There are lots of interesting issues. There are lots of interesting questions, ranging from alien abductions like we talked about recently to potential connection between Cherokee Indians and the ancient people of Israel. There are lots of fascinating questions. However, it is possible to spend one's life on peripheral issues. It is possible to spend one's life on things that are completely secondary or tertiary or not even in the list of top 10 or 100. It is possible to get so fascinated with things that don't edify, that don't change lives, that don't bear fruit, that don't really affect anything, that we lose our focus and the question of why we are here. And I would dare suggest that it is not God distracting us and leading us in these rabbit trails. That being said, may I strongly encourage you to put your emphasis into that which will bear lasting fruit. To put your emphasis, as I've said repeatedly, on the fundamentals. To put your emphasis not on the secondary things, not on the other areas of controversy, but those things which are primarily important for your own life in God, for impacting others, for being a disciple, and for making disciples. Once more, I'll say it, and you'll hear it many other times here on the broadcast. Major on the majors. Everything else will fall into place. You will be blessed, and you will bring blessing to others. There are enough things for us to think about to take us a lifetime and even an eternity. Let's focus on what matters most. Back with you tomorrow.